Robin Kogan is a nationally certified school nurse. She's entering her 18th year in the Camden City, New Jersey school district. As a new school year begins, she talks about the connection between home, school, and the school nurse. This segment is titled, A Brain in Pain Cannot Learn.
Transitions from school to home, from home to school are always fraught sometimes with complications. In the ideal world, everything stays the same. But as we know, with families and children, there are a lot of transitions that occur, especially when there's a break, whether it's a summer break or whether it's even a weekend or a holiday. I always find that any transition from the routine of school to home and back can be really complex. And what we can do as school nurses is to keep that dialogue open with the families and have the families understand that because we are in care of their children all day, every day, the more information we have to be able to respond to the needs of their child, the more successful they'll be, not only staying within their classroom, but also feeling comfortable within the school environment.
Robin, I know you've been a school nurse for over 18 years now, and we understand that in some family situations or guardianship, events that do happen, let's even just limit it to summer vacation or school breaks, are not comfortably communicated to the school nurse, teacher, or staff at the school. What would you say to parents to help them feel safe about that?
Understanding the role of the school nurse and how we care for their children, I think, is really the responsibility of the school nurse to communicate with the parents. We have to really, truly do a better job at outreaching to our families, being that welcoming person, that safe space that parents can come and look at the school nurse as someone who can either connect them to social service resources, be that connector between home and school. And so it is definitely a two-way relationship building process. But I do strongly believe, after all my years as a school nurse, that there are things that the school nurse can do to be that welcoming hand, that warm handoff, if you will, whether it be especially connecting with the parents. If it's a child is new to our school, really being welcoming and open, communicating either whatever is easiest for the parent, text messaging, phone calls, emails. We have to do a better job on our end of outreach. I find that actually as a theme through school, sometimes teachers are hesitant to reach out to parents as well. And in our role as school nurses, it really is our professional obligation to do that, to find out as much as we can about that student so that we can support them while they're at school. Oftentimes, the school day is quite long, especially if they have wraparound services before and after care. I have some students in my district that are there from 7 a.m. to 5:30 p.m., and that's an incredibly long day. Many things can happen, and what happens at home absolutely impacts what happens at school.
Would you speak to the kinds of events and the range of the type of event that may impact a child's return and sense of being able to learn given what the incident was? What types of things are we talking about that should be communicated?
Any transition, anything that's changed from the last time the child was in school, I'll give you some examples. We've had children. I work in an urban school district, and there's a lot of transiency. Parents lose their home. They're no longer able to stay with a family member that they were staying with. They are evicted from their apartment. There's a fire. Those huge transitions, it's so important that the school nurse is made aware for to help the child, to help the teacher understand maybe some behaviors that they're seeing. So any living housing transition, job transitions, when families have job insecurity, that impacts the children. All of those social determinants of health, food insecurities, housing insecurities, illness. I had a student once who it was just she and her mom, and they shared a bedroom, and her mom passed away next to her. And she came to school that very next day.
How was it learned that happened?
the student told me.
That's a heartbreaking story.
Yeah. Yeah. And so she then transitioned to live with her father, who was out of state and came. There were so many transitions for this girl, but it just so happened at that time I had just lost my father, and I had literally come back from my bereavement leave the day that she came in and told me what happened with her mother. So it was just, you know, one of those amazing coincidences, non-coincidence, where I was able to support her because I didn't understand the depth of her trauma because she was 10 and I was clearly decades older, but we both lost a parent that year.
I'm sure that your sensitivity to these children extends beyond a personal experience as well with your heart and your experience. I've heard the term a trauma-sensitive school. Can you tell us what that means and how does it operate?
So I really prefer the term trauma-responsive because, so when you're looking at childhood trauma, those childhood events, those adverse childhood experiences, typically, you know, there's 10 that were part of this study that was done in the 90s that looked at, actually the population that the study looked at was basically white middle-class adults. And they reported back on specific incidences that impacted them during childhood, things like a parent incarcerated, parental discord, substance abuse in the home, violence in the home. There were 10 different categories. And what they found over a longitudinal study was that people who had 4 or more of these incidences actually had lifelong health impact decades later. And so this whole thought of children experiencing trauma in their most crucial developmental ages and stages impacts literally their biology. And a trauma-sensitive school or a trauma-responsive school understands that the behaviors that we're seeing from some of our children are because of possibly trauma that they're experiencing currently or that they have experienced in their homes. The, you know, instability, all the things that we've discussed around social determinants. And in my circumstance where I work, there's an additional factor because when you have adverse community environments, in addition to adverse childhood experiences, they actually call that a pair of ACEs.
What is an adverse community environment?
If there is community violence, those things that we talked about earlier, housing insecurity, transportation difficulties, the adverse events that cause poverty or poverty impacts, that is adverse community environments. It doesn't mean that the children aren't loved and cared for. It means that within the context that they're growing, there's additional stressful circumstances that impact literally their biology. You know, the whole notion now of you can determine length of life by your zip code, and people living in parallel zip codes can actually have completely different life expectancies based on your zip code. If that's not health inequity, I don't know what is.
We also can speak to or at least acknowledge that in many of those communities, those schools are not resource rich, and many times it's an overcrowded situation as well as not having adequate supplies, teacher support, etc. So
I also believe truthfully that I don't think the way that schools are set up, regardless of where they're located, they are not set up to understand and address this new thought around adverse childhood experiences and the behaviors that we're absolutely seeing, not to mention, what about the traumatic experiences of the teachers and the caregivers? You know, a dysregulated adult cannot regulate a dysregulated child. And the whole thought behind being trauma responsive is that you can maintain your own homeostasis, your own regulation, so that you can respond to a child and not react to a child.
Is that
and we haven't even touched the whole issue of substance use disorder and the opioid crisis and what that has done to creating instability in communities and schools.
When you talk about a trauma-responsive school, does it require the entire staff, administration, faculty, all be trained in an approach working with children?
It absolutely does. I mean, if you're going to truly be trauma responsive, it is every single person that touches that child's life. So if they take a bus, it's from the bus driver to the custodian, to the lunch people, to the school nurse, to every staff, and for each other as well. It's a whole different way of viewing what a school community can be. And it's happening all across the country. But it does take a real commitment, and it is an ongoing process. It's not one of these one and done, I can check that off my box, I've been trained. It's really a different way of being. It's creating a culture that is trauma responsive, that understands the importance of, I think there's three terms. It's regulate, relate, and reason. You can't, and that's by Dr. Bruce Perry created that framework. You cannot, a brain in pain cannot learn. And when children come dysregulated and rough, as they call it, they cannot learn. And until they are able to regulate, it doesn't matter what you do, what you have, they're not going to be able to participate. We have to respond to the children as they are in front of us, not as we necessarily wish them to be. And this is all based on what they're experiencing, either at home, before they get to school, something even at school easily could trigger them. So it really is a completely different mindset, but it is absolutely happening. In fact, the entire country of Scotland has a goal to become a trauma-informed nation. Can you imagine?
I can.
And they are really reaching this goal. They are really getting people on board. And it's just wonderful to watch, because I think we have to have these big ideas and raise the bar as to what we're doing for our kids.
I'm curious if you would share with us what your early rituals are or behaviors in the beginning of the school year to begin to establish those relationships mm-hmm. with the students.
Well, and that's the key. The key is establishing those relationships. In my work environment, it takes a long time for people to really trust that I'm going to come back, that I'm going to be my word. I've been there 18 years and not that it's taken 18 years for people to trust me, but it really does take time to build these relationships and to be that consistent presence, that caregiver that is, reliable, that I keep my word. If I say I'm going to do something, I follow through. And, you know, these are small things that mean a lot to people. There's a lot of distrust in the community, and there's a lot of programs that have kind of dropped in and then left, and there was no follow-up. So, and I've seen them come and I've seen them go. And what I do know for sure is that children, staff, the school community needs consistency. They thrive on routine and ritual, not on chaos. And we have to each do our part to be part of creating that culture of collaboration and civility and engagement with our families.
Where do you position yourself physically in school?
So in my current role, I'm almost like a visitor in my schools. I am now a preschool nurse, so I go in and out of preschool buildings all over the city. And I am generally in an area that is shared space. I don't have my own office. One school I do have a small office space, but ideally the school nurse should be right in the center. They should be near the main office. They should have access to the school counselor. They should be part of a bigger team. But, you know, schools aren't always designed for the ideal. And in my last school, where I was for many, many years, I was actually in the back of the building, which was the least desirable place.
And let's talk a moment about the school nurse, and you're covering multiple schools. Tell us about the state of New Jersey. What obstacles are school nurses facing in order to have a school nurse in every school, which would make sense?
The state of New Jersey is one of the gold standards of school nursing coverage, because in our statutes through the Department of Education, there is language in the statute that there needs to be a certified school nurse on every campus. Now, what a campus is defined as is really where some school districts are playing the semantics game. But typically, there is a school nurse in every building in New Jersey. In my circumstance as a preschool nurse, I am a public school employee working with Camden City school children, but they are having their preschool experience with private providers. So it's a little bit of a hybrid. But typically there is a school nurse in every building in New Jersey. That's one of the high points. One of the low points is that we have no representation either at the Department of Education or the Department of Health. Other states have state school nurse consultants who really represent the school nurses at the levels of the Department of Health and the Department of Education in their states. And New Jersey has no representation at all of school nurses. We have our state organization and we have our National Association of School Nurses. But in terms of having representation at the state level, we have none. We used to, and that position, when the person retired, she was never replaced. We have lobbied to change that, and we have not had any success.
What's the national picture as a quick flash of what that looks like outside of New Jersey?
The national picture is all over the place. School nurses, there's no set standard nationally. There is a national certification for school nursing, and by 2020, anyone who sits for that exam must have a BSN, actually, a bachelor's degree in nursing. But at this moment, there is no set standard. There are school nurses in Oregon with one school nurse to 4,000 students, you know, many, many miles apart. There's California similar. I mean, it is within a state, there's different rules and regulations based on county. Florida is a perfect example. There's some counties in Florida where there's a school nurse in every school. There's some counties in Florida where my niece went to school in Parkland, where there was, I believe the school nurse there was an agency nurse. So it really depends on how a district values the presence of a health professional in their school building.
What would you tell parents who are listening what they can do to make this a possibility?
I would hope that parents would lobby and canvass their board of education, their local congress people, their school board, their health department. I encourage parents to find out what their school policy is. Is there a school nurse in their building every single day, every single period? Are they sharing services? Parents need to be informed as to what the policies and procedures are for their school district, whether by county or by school district. That's very important. I think many parents, especially if they're new to the whole idea of their children entering school, they have so many things to think about, but their children's health is primary. And it's really important not only to partner with their school nurse, but to know that there is a school nurse in their child's school. Because things happen in the middle of the day, at the beginning of the day, at the end of the day. I mean, I've had many students who have their first time seizure at school, who have their first time of finding out that they're allergic to a food that they ingested at school. Can you imagine if there was no school nurse?
Robin Kogan is a nationally certified school nurse entering her 18th year in the Camden City, New Jersey School District. She serves as faculty in the School Nurse Certificate Program at Rutgers Camden School of Nursing, where she teaches the next generation of school nurses. You can find her blog at relentlessschoolnurse.com. Thank you for joining us today, Robin.
Thank you so much.